This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
After quite a remarkable turnaround, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has succeeded in brokering a Brexit deal with the European Union. Now, all he has to do is to navigate it through the House of Commons. Johnson has been negotiating with EU officials ahead of a crunch summit to work out the details of these new proposals for Brexit, including solutions to the Irish border problem. The ever-sceptical Simon Lincoln-Reader is our man in London, and in our Johannesburg studio, economist Professor Raymond Parsons of the Northwest University School of Business. Simon, kick us off. Boris says it's a great new Brexit deal. Is it great? Is it new? And is this Brexit?
Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Professor Parsons.
Yes, good evening to
you. Just to confuse people even more, on a new deal, some language has been adjusted with the anti-democratic backdrop, which you know has been Theresa May's legacy, removed and replaced with the proposal of a customs partnership or protocol, which is actually, if you peel back the layers and probably imagine, just the backstopping. So I think that, you know, to manage expectations, we are dealing, have been dealing with semantics and at best appearances.
Raymond, how are you reading it?
Well, I think, you know, we think that the question was posed 3 years ago in the referendum. Shakespeare said it 500 years ago. To Brexit or not to Brexit? That is the question. And we've got an answer today of sorts. I'm not going to go into the merits of it. I'm simply saying, obviously, it's a positive development. If you give the track record of what's been happening over the past 3.5 years, and we're now 3 years and three prime ministers later, it seems to me, though, at this point, one more of a sugar high. I think quite clearly the fact there's been a breakthrough, there is some agreement on the table. I think that's a positive step. But as has been indicated, there's still a political process to go through on Saturday at the British Parliament. But the other part of the good news is, of course, that even if it's rejected on Saturday, it's unlikely that you're going to get crashing out at the end of the month, because that letter has to be written, then asking for an extension of time. So from the point of view of those who worry about whether their goods are going to get bulked up at Dover or whatever, all that disruption, that looks as if that is on the back burner, whatever happens on Saturday. But I think there are still a number of uncertainties here that will have to be resolved before you can say you've got a definitive Brexit. And of course, you may argue it's a soft Brexit for Ireland, it's a hard Brexit for the rest of the United Kingdom, if you start unpacking it. But I think really it's a step forward if you believe that a Brexit must happen. And the question would really be, well, where do you go after Saturday if you do get the agreement of the Parliament or if you do not?
And effectively, if you look at the customs issues here, duty won't automatically have to be paid on goods coming into Northern Ireland from Great Britain. But where something is at risk of them being transported into the Republic of Ireland, which is then part of the EU customs union, then duty will have to be paid. So who's going to determine whether or not something is actually at risk there without having a hard border? Simon, some of these issues practically become rather difficult to police.
Of course, there are lightning rod, the DUP, who have already stated that they cannot abide the vague terms, and I'm using their language, of customs, VAT. Obviously, as you know, that they believe all these threaten to compromise or even destroy the Good Friday Agreement, and it's already clear that come Saturday they won't be voting for the government.
I think what one has to understand is that Boris Johnson, that Mount Everest that he referred to, he now has another one on Saturday, because he needs to get 320 votes. And he is still at the moment well short. And he'll have to devote the next 48 hours to putting together that majority of 320 votes if he wants to get it through Parliament on Saturday.
Simon, I know you've got a few of your mates on the 1922 committee. Politically, as Raymond says, it all boils down to the vote on Saturday. 90 minutes are set really to decide the course of history to some extent. The backing of 320 MPs, do you see the political maths adding up to getting the deal over the line?
No, absolutely not. Just on the subject of the ERG, it was media reports during the week, they had a split. That wasn't the case. And, that said, I see them, many of them, voting for this deal, if only because they finally realize the threat of a radical left government is looking. Even if it does end up resembling or, in fact, being Theresa May's deal. But I think it's important to analyze the other parties and what they've said. Now, the SNP and Labour were first out the box, with the SNP moaning about how it could never wait for something like this. But Labour is once again extraordinary here. Now, think about this. You have Jeremy Corbyn, who's far more a Eurosceptic than Boris, far more a Eurosceptic than 80% of the ERG, for that matter, straitjacketed by the progressive main wing of his party, reduced to making the hysterical and contradictory remarks on the subject. Corbyn was Tony Benn's bagman for in the early stages of his political career, and Tony Benn spent so much of his own political career resisting the influence of the EU. Now it turns out that his own son has ended up one of the EU's biggest advocates, being obviously the enabler of the Benn legislation, which is due to kick in on Saturday when he doesn't pass the deal, I predict.
I think the important point here too is that you could argue the EU have played their cards well enough to be able to put the ball firmly into the British Parliament's court, that if this thing goes wrong, that's where the responsibility will lie. So I think we will find out on Saturday whether the Prime Minister's on a fool's errand or not, whether he can put those numbers together and what will be the consequences of either it going one way or the other.
And if you look at those numbers, 320 required, currently 288 Tory MPs in the Commons. He needs the support of 32 non-Tories, including the DUP. And as Simon, as you've said, the DUP has already said they won't vote for the deal in Parliament. So it really looks like it'll be very difficult for him to get it through. So what happens then if he doesn't manage to succeed to get that 320 magic number on Saturday?
Well, as Professor Parsons has alluded, the legislation immediately kicks in and he is legally obliged to seek a technical extension to Article 50. Now, if he can quit, because he has made a number of quite very broad remarks about the consequences of requesting an extension, and he said something to the degree of lying down in a ditch, if he doesn't quit, I believe that he'll campaign for a general election on this deal manifesto.
I think what's possible, of course, depending on what happens on Saturday, is whether the opposition then moves a motion of no confidence, which, if it's passed, could trigger off an election, which is what he wants. And then we know on what grounds he would then fight that election, because I think he's already put some of those strategies in place in the event of an election happening.
Jean-Claude Juncker was quoted today, I don't know how accurate this is, as saying they wouldn't consider an extension to Article 50 at this stage. What do you make of that, Raymond?
Well, I've got a feeling that whatever they may say, they would prefer a deal at the end of the day, however impatient and frustrated they may be. They also, of course, would like to get on with other things. They probably hope that the sugar high today might translate into something more more long-standing, which would give them the opportunity to pursue another agenda on other issues. But I think the issue, from what I gather, the undercurrent is that if there was a letter coming asking for an extension, it will be considered. I don't think they want midnight on the 31st to become a nightmare. So I think they will grant the extra extension. In fact, there was at some point that they would say, never mind a month or 2 months, take a year, sort this out once and for all. But I think...
I think
that the convergence of factors is, yes, there could be another extension because a resolution is in sight. We're just not quite there. So I think on that basis, it's possible that the EU will say, OK, we will respond positively to a letter of that sort.
Well, I do see the nightmare continuing beyond the 31st, and it's already the most popular Halloween outfit, I'm sure, being dressed up as Brexit. Simon, there's a broader issue here for the EU. Already we see Angela Merkel demanding EU budget rebates for Germany because the UK will no longer be a net contributor. So this is really only the beginning of the story of how Brexit changes the whole political dynamic in the EU.
Yes, absolutely. Look, there's been, you know, I dispute people who broadly describe Brexiteers as being thick or racist and so on. There was a lot of foresight was put into the decision behind many leave referendum votes in 2016. And certainly there was indications then that the all was not well with the EU. And as we've, you know, seen in the last few months, particularly in Germany, it doesn't look good on the horizon, and the idea being that Britain should get out in any way that it can.
I think the other important point over the three-year period, we must understand that the world economic environment has also changed. Whether it's the China, you know, United States conflict, the slowing down in the world economy, the possibility of a recession in Germany. This also helps to concentrate the mind and saying that actually first prize for us, whether we're in the EU or in the United Kingdom, is a smooth and orderly Brexit. I think that's what for them would still be first prize. And I think that is what would drive whatever options still remain in order to bring this matter to a conclusion.
So it's not just about the Wallabies versus the English on Saturday. All eyes will be glued to BBC or wherever else you watch Westminster. Economist Professor Raymond Parsons of the Northwest University School of Business, Simon Lincoln-Reeder, co-founder of TNI Financial Technology and columnist for biznews.com.